about the constitutionality too. I guess there are a lot of really legitimate concerns that have been raised, and there's some very legitimate purposes that have been raised. And I guess my umbrella question to you is, having sat through a couple of days of these hearings, do you think that there still is a function for the original participants who struggled with these issues, I expect, long and hard, who probably foresaw most of the questions that are troubling the committee and the questions that are the basis for the testimony and for the splits in opinion on the bill? And do you think at this point that there is any further purpose for having members of the task force get together now that the hotspots are clear here and come up with something which would effectively move the two sides closer together and bring us some amendments that we could feel comfortable with?
Absolutely, yes.
You do think there is a role then for another meeting of either an ad hoc task force or the original task force?
Yes, and we struggled for more than just a couple of days. An awful lot of work went into this. The final decision to recommend expanded criteria was a 6-5 plurality, and it was made in the context of expanded criteria being substantially down the list of priorities. The other priorities were removed for economic purposes. One would have to wonder whether the same vote would exist today.
Excuse me. Representative Dix.
I'm sorry, Representative Baumann, are you done?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm curious about something you just said. The things on the top were subtracted for economic reasons, meaning that we wouldn't, here at the legislature, it wasn't feasible to get those passed.
That's correct. The critical mass package was the first priority. It was about a $54 million priority. And the Department of Mental Health didn't submit it. I'm speculating that they believed it had so little chance of passage that it wasn't worth submitting.
So this was the fifth or sixth thing on the list because you thought you, because the group felt politically that you could get this through the process.
Right. This, in my judgment, this represented a compromise position, and I recall asking Dr. Bray if it would be funded, if it would be funded to the extent that the aftercare and outpatient care would exist. He said that it was, and he also pointed out that it was, after all, near the bottom of the priority list, that there were other things the division felt more important. What he was saying, I think, is that this is an extremely serious problem involving a lot of people and is very expensive, but the priorities were done on the basis of, let's just assume that the money will be there and deal with the mechanics of the problem. We did that, and then economic reality set in, and some of the higher priorities were removed. I think now that the group, we never really did sit down and define what should happen in the outpatient care situation. I think that's an important thing to do. And to bring some of John Parker, for example, and some of the people who are very active in this area into that to share their thoughts.
Mr. Chair?
Just a comment. The task force recommendations, the extension of the criteria is number 2 out of 10 recommendations in the executive summary that we have. Yeah, Representative Dix, were you done?
Is that, well, I guess the final version that we received, is that where the group was at, or was it the fifth or sixth item on the list? And because the group felt that this was what pragmatically and politically could get through the process, it's now number 2.
My recollection is from conversations and in our discussion that it was further down the list. But if someone's just read it, right there is number 2, then it's probably number 2.
Thank you. I don't remember. Thank you. Any more?
Thank you.
Mike Hanen. State Indigent Defense Board. Mike Hansen.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, my name is Mike Hansen. I am the administrator for the State Indigent Defense Board. And I'm here to address only parts of this bill, not the the substance of the provisions. The Indigent Defense Board is concerned specifically with sections 3.
Mike, before you start, you're the administrator for the Indigent Defense Board, and your board is a board that's directly under the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court Justice of the state and is a part of the Judicial Department budget.
We are part of the Judicial Department, and our status legally is an independent agency within that branch of government. And I think for the current biennium, we are part of their budget. For the next biennium, we'll probably have a separate budget.
Okay. So, at least in the Ways and Means process this time around, your budget for indigent defense basically competes with the rest of the court system budget for dollars in this state directly, because you're all part of one budget.
For 85, 87, I think that's true. For 87, 89, it probably is still true, but to a lesser extent.
Okay. I just wanted to your concerns with these bills, right, if I'm to guess correctly, represent dollar concerns.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. It's all I'm here to address, basically, is the money issue. I think we've been very sensitized as board members and administrator to budget problems with indigent defense. And I want to refer specifically to sections 3, sub 10, section 4, 1F, and section 26.1. These all deal with transferring from the counties to the state responsibility to pay the cost for the mental health examiners part of these hearings. It hasn't been possible for me to do a full fiscal impact statement on this, but I've previously provided some written testimony, and I've made a guess. I think it would probably be reasonably realistic of a biennial cost of between $1.5 to $2 million to pay the cost for those mental health examiners. Now, that's a new cost that I believe was not included in the $7.1 million figure provided to you last time by the governor's office representative. So we're talking about possibly another $1.5 to $2 million on top of that. And I'm concerned about where this $1.5 to $2 million is going to come from. I will tell you that it was not included in our budget estimate for 87-89. 90% of our money now goes to pay for attorneys and their services. Assuming that there is no additional money appropriated to us, this money is going to come out of the pockets of the attorneys who provide cases. It will have an impact on our ability to provide services to our expected total caseload growth. And it'll happen one of two ways. Either we reduce what we pay to those lawyers and they do less work on those cases, or there's a certain number of cases somewhere in the system we don't pay for. My concern is that the money has to be there. You've heard this expressed a number of times for handling the program. The sum of money to pay for these examiners has to be provided as well. And I guess what I want to caution you on is, one, take this money into account as well. It is additional money. The cost is not going to be $7.1 million. It's going to be $7.1 million plus whatever the expense will be for these mental health examiners. That's the kind of money you're talking about for this program. I am also concerned, I guess from a programmatic point of view, as a new program, of taking on an additional responsibility. I have a picture in my mind of our budget as an indigent defense budget and our cost being related to our total caseload times the rate of indigency in the state, how many people we have to take care of, times the attorney hours that will be spent handling those cases, plus the cost for direct support services such as transcripts, investigators, expert witnesses on behalf of the indigent person. Those four elements. I think this program adds a fifth element, which we'll just call other programs. And I'm concerned about adding other programs to indigent defense at this time. I think we're still struggling as a state to come to grips with what it costs to provide indigent defense services. We're concerned with how to keep some control on that. Adding other programs, I don't think, is an appropriate thing to do at this time, particularly since this other program involves some of the same problems I think the state inherited when it took indigent defense on as a responsibility. you've essentially taken on a responsibility to pay the cost and to provide the funds for that, but the authority to incur the service, to incur the expense, rests with many local governments and different agencies and actors. This program does the same thing. It continues that responsibility. In effect, what you're doing is handing the checkbook to someone else, but you keep the bank statement, you have to balance it each month. That separation of authority and responsibility is a real problem, I think, and it's a fundamental one that, frankly, representatives and senators are going to have to address if there's going to be some control over budgeting, for instance, and defense spending.
Do that again.
The analysis and how I
yeah.
the budget process?
The analysis and the potential for danger within the system, budgetary system.
Well, I think there's a fundamental issue that I've certainly come to grips with, and that is how do you control spending in our budget? In our budget, basically, our cost is going to be based on the total amount of cases that come into that system. The number of people who are indigent, so we basically will take the total caseload, multiply it by a rate of indigency. A certain percentage of those people represented by those cases are indigent and therefore will be entitled to service. That net number of cases will be multiplied by the number of attorney hours that will be spent in handling those cases, plus the cost for direct support services. That's essentially what our budget is. 90% of our money goes to attorneys. The other 10% is for these direct support services, such as transcripts and investigator expenses, that sort of thing. We don't have other programs. In essence, what will be done with the provisions in this particular bill is to add an other program, the cost for mental health professionals to do an examination to determine whether a person fits the criteria and therefore should be committed. My concern with that is it shares some real problems. I can make an estimate about what it's going to cost, okay? My estimate of $1.5 to $2 million simply was taking the number of anticipated mental health cases during the next biennium. I multiplied it by two examiners times $100 a piece, which I think probably will be relatively conservative. And coming up with a $1.5 to $2 million price tag. If there are more cases that come into the system, it's going to cost more. If there are less, it will cost something less. Problem gets to be is, who brings these cases into the system? It isn't the attorney. It isn't my board. In essence, it really isn't the legislature, except as the definition is expanded. It's persons who are entitled to cause a hearing to take place, local county health officials, members of the family, citizens, police officers, others who bring these cases in. When they bring these cases into the system, they cause certain expenses to be incurred. One of those expenses in this case will be the cost of a mental examiner. With this bill, you will assume the responsibility to pay for those mental examiners. But you're not putting any kind of limit on how many and what they actually cost, other than there are provisions for the board to establish the fees. They will be paid. I'm not sure if there are many mental health examiners who would work for $30 an hour like many of the assigned counsel do in the present system. But it raises, I guess probably I've gone a little too far here, but it raises again, I think, a fundamental policy issue. Policy issue is that at this point, if you want budgetary control, I don't think we have it with the current system of providing indigent defense services, because the cases come from agencies such as local police, county sheriff, state police. They come from mental health officials locally. They come from juvenile authorities. Anyone can many people can bring a case into the system, cause an expense to be incurred, in this case, the provision of legal counsel, or in this case, provision of a mental health examiner. That expense is going to continue and is going to expand as that caseload continues to grow. In essence, what you're doing by this kind of process is taking on a responsibility to pay that doesn't have a limit other than the natural limits on the growth of that caseload. This bill, I think, shares that same problem we have right now.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
The testimony of an earlier witness was that whereas the earlier law required that there be two examiners, and one of whom had to be a physician, this law only requires one examiner, and that examiner doesn't have to be a physician.
Right.
I know it may not be your department because it's not in your budget right now, but at the same time, that to me sounds like a total cost saving somewhere in the system of the difference between two examiners, one of whom is a physician, and one examiner.
Well, Representative Bauman, that may be the case in the sense that instead of $1.5 to $2 million, perhaps the price tag is more like $500,000 to $1 million. One difference would be, of course, at this time the state is going to pick up the tab rather than the counties, and that as the bill is drafted, the tab is going to be picked up by my budget, basically, which does not now have those funds in it. It's not earmarked. We haven't put any of those funds into our budget estimates for 87-89. So the fundamental issue is the transfer of responsibility to pay from the county to the state, whatever the dollar amount is.
Of course, and, I'm aware of the problems with indigent defense. Your entire system, that entire budget, not just the mental health examiner portion, but all of indigent defense operates on that, hand the checkbook to somebody else and you do the auditing.
Yes.
And ultimately, what you're talking about in your in the bulk of your budget right now is that you've handed your checkbook to crime victims or to the police, who or to investigators from the district attorney's office who initiate the information that's the basis for a complaint or an information. So I guess what you're, you know, what I'm interpreting what you're saying is if the state asks you to do this, you certainly expect to be funded. But other than the county-state problem, I guess it's hard for me to see your role, your accounting role, becoming any different. Now, the condition is, if I can summarize you, the condition is you don't want the state to just give you an obligation without funding it.
Yes.
But can I assume then that you are not backing away from this role, which is essentially somebody else controls where your money goes? That's just kind of the way it is.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far. I think that I characterize this as an other program, and it does fall in the category of being an other program in the sense that our role, as I understand it, is to provide services, legal services and direct support services for indigent persons. For example, I really can't complain about provisions of the bill that require us to pay witnesses or examiners who are appointed at the request of the allegedly mentally ill person. Okay, I think that's a service that relates to their protection and benefit, and they're entitled to it. But the mental health examiner brought into the hearing, I don't think falls in that same category. I think that person is different. That person is there at the request immediately, yes, upon the order of the court, but they're not there for the benefit of that particular person, the allegedly mentally ill person, or there to provide them with some protection in the process.
One more. When you arrived at your $100 figure, did you use any information that you had from the counties about what the current cost of examiners?
No, I did not. I didn't have that information available to me, so I just tried to pick a conservative figure. It's all I could do at this point. So I know that the numbers can be soft, but I think probably it's fair to say it's going to be a substantial sum of money.
But you do know the counties are picking up that cost currently, is that
they
correct?
They are now, yeah. And I am concerned, I think less concerned. First priority is money. The next concern I have is picking up additional work, services that I don't think relate directly to the representation of the indigent person. I don't see any reason to expand our program. You'll notice in the bill, for example, that in terms of establishing qualifications and who's entitled to be a mental examiner, that goes to the Mental Health Division. Might they not be a better depository for handling the payment of that as well as indigent defense? And if we start adding these other programs here, where does that end? How many other programs are we going to be asked to pick up? I'm not particularly excited about that. One other element to take into that account is even our physical capacity to handle it. We now have 1.5 full-time equivalent employees in this agency. We're looking to expand that to 2.5 in the next biennium. You're not talking about a lot of bodies here to do the work that needs to be done. So we're not in a situation to, I guess, graciously assume a great deal of additional work. So,
thank you.
Okay.
Can I ask one more? Actually, one and a half.
One.
Is there any policy reason here that you can see why this expense which looks like it's going to be reduced, should be removed from counties?
Why it should be removed from them? No, I can't think of any particular reason why it should be removed from the counties. I, frankly, from my point of view, I would suggest that the problem of dealing with the mentally ill is a community problem, which certainly includes the state, but ought to include all levels of government where it gets to be an issue.
I was only referring to the medical examination, Mr.
Right.
Hansen.
Right.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Sandra Milius, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is not Daryl Walker. My name is Sandra Milius, but I am appearing today on behalf of Dr. Daryl Walker, who is president of the Oregon MED Providers Association and executive director of Mount Hood Community Mental Health Center and a former member of the Task Force on Commitment of the Mentally Ill, Civil Commitment of the Mentally Ill Persons. He was unable to be here today to deliver his own testimony. I'd just like to briefly read into the record what he has had to say. I believe the subject of civil commitment is both extremely important as well as complex. The association strongly supports any improvement of the system, which would provide help for the mentally ill persons sooner and with less anguish to the families. It is imperative, however, that while providing involuntary services, voluntary mental health services not be jeopardized. It is because of this that I support HB 2324 with considerable ambivalence. As you know, the demand for mental health services far outstrips available services, both voluntary and involuntary. Because of this, if HB 2324 were to be passed without a significant increase in funding, it could have a devastating impact on an already overloaded service delivery system. If it is the decision of the state legislature to broaden the criteria for commitment, it must in turn increase funding by a significant degree. There are other aspects of the bill that I support without reservation. All changes which allow an increase in available information during the commitment process will help to ensure that the people who really need help get it. I also strongly support the presence of an attorney to represent the state's case during the commitment hearing. Presently, and all too often, family members and mental health professionals are left to grapple alone with the legal system in an effort to get help for mentally ill people. In summary, the Oregon MED Providers Association supports HB 2324, but wishes to express its concern for broadening the commitment criteria unless a significant increase in funding for the system it will impact also occurs. Thank you very much.
Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. Glenn Klein.
Representative Bauman, members of the committee. My name is Glenn Klein. I'm an Assistant Attorney General representing the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice has not taken a general position on the bill, but there are two aspects of the bill that impose obligations on the department that we would like to address. The bill would provide for the first time that the Attorney General's office represent the state's interest whenever a state hospital initiates a commitment hearing. Normally, these hearings will be the recommitment hearings after someone has been at OSH or DAMISH for 6 months, they come back to court. The Mental Health Division has estimated that there would be approximately 700 of these hearings during the coming biennium. That would require about 2,100 hours of attorney time at a total legal cost of approximately $105,000 for the biennium. There is not presently any position in the department's budget, any attorney position, allocated for handling these new responsibilities, and it would take about two-thirds of a full-time equivalent attorney position to handle these responsibilities. Our second concern relates to who should be responsible for this cost of approximately $105,000. The bill as drafted in Section 26 provides that the Department of Justice shall be responsible for the cost of the Attorney General's office in handling these commitment hearings. Generally, Oregon Revised Statutes provides that a state agency is responsible for the legal costs of the Attorney General's office when the Attorney General's office is representing that state agency. We believe perhaps that the drafters of the bill simply made a mistake by saying that the Department of Justice shall be responsible for the cost of the Attorney General's office, in as much as the Department of Justice is the Attorney General's office. Normally, in this case, in these types of proceedings, the responsible agency, which would be the Mental Health Division, would be the agency to pick up the legal costs. We have drafted an amendment, which is attached to my testimony, which would allocate the legal costs to the Mental Health Division. Unless the committee has any questions, that's all I had to offer.
Thank you very much. That's such a graceful return to
We just got three more witnesses.
Who is that?
Kinsley.
Who is that? Okay. Kingsley Click.
Right.
I do too. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is not the other half of the Indigent Defense Board.
No. I guess that's the quickest way to answer it. Though I'll make a comment a little bit on that and let you ask questions too. For the record, I'm Kingsley Click. I'm an attorney in the State Court Administrator's Office. I was also on the task force representing the Judicial Department's interests. The Judicial Department would like to go on record as supporting HB 2324 with a few exceptions. We are supporting it for its positive administrative impact on the courts. Overall, the bill should promote the timely and effective processing of commitment cases by clarifying procedural and evidentiary ambiguities that are currently in the statutes, and also by creating uniform timeframes and systems for processing these cases. Also, relaxing some of the evidence rules would give the judges better information for the decision making in this case, and I think the decision is a critical one to make. You did hear that the bill has a large impact on the Indigent Defense Fund for the payment of examiners. We agree that that assessment is correct. During the task force hearings, there was not much testimony that I recall presented that this was a problem, having the counties pay for it. The department would like to say that, you know, they don't see evidence that that is a problem, and that on the Indigent Defense Board's behalf, we would support not transferring that responsibility to the state system, even though, as I think Mike pointed out, it's not the Judicial Department's budget per se, but the Indigent Defense budgets. I don't know if he clarified it, or if Mike talking about it will clarify it anymore. For the 87-89 biennium session, we have two separate budgets going in, one the Judicial Department's operating budget and trial court operating budget, and the Indigent Defense budget. And as Mike pointed out, under the statutes, while they're an agency created in the judicial branch, once the Chief Justice appoints them, the statute set out that they're independent from the Chief Justice and his control. So does that give any better understanding? This binding, it's still pretty muddy because we all have a little bit of the action and most of the responsibility. So other than that, and so I just basically came up here to put our position on the record and say that There are a few areas we may want to offer some amendments in during the work session, and they're not to the merits, but just to clarify some of the things that affect the courts, like appointment of counsel, judicial immunity, things like that. Things that sound major to you, but...
Those few things, you wish to speak to those?
Not at this time. I thought if you, during a work session, when you got to the actual nitty-gritty of how this is going to go, then we could offer them up and you could look at them.
Well, we'd like to know what they're going to be.
Okay.
And if you could get them to us in writing.
Sure, I'll do that. I was going to say we didn't have a written.
Rather than during a work session, it would be helpful to us so we can look at them.
Okay. Basically, that we didn't want to amend things that looked like you weren't going to go forward with. So I'll be happy to do that in the next few days. Thank you.